Hello and welcome to another episode of Menopause Cafe in Conversation with series of podcasts. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Philippa Butler. And Philippa is a chartered physiotherapist, founder and owner of Precision Limited, which is an extremely neat online wellness platform. Good afternoon, Philippa.
Good afternoon, Helen.
How are you? I am well, thank you. I am well, especially now that spring appears to be here.
Oh, yes. This is just giving us all a lift, isn't it?
It has, hasn't it? How has COVID been treating you? How has the lockdown?
Well, it's been a very busy time because, as you said, I launched a new business, everything was new to me in the middle of COVID lockdown version one, whatever you want to call that. So, you know, I've been really, really busy learning lots of new skills and pulling a few hairs out on occasion. But for the most part, you know, like everyone else, it is wearing a bit thin, I have to say.
Like our hair, I think, unfortunately. Yes. So we're in menopause.
Indeed.
So did you pivot then or were you running? Because I know you run yoga and Pilates classes. Were you running those face-to-face before and then you transitioned onto online? Or did you literally just start online?
Well, I literally just started online. It was a plan that I had in my mind from the Christmas time, and COVID was not a feature at that point. And so it was this wild idea that I had that was so novel and unique, or so I thought. You know, and I've been teaching physical classes, but I've always worked for other people, and really that's because I've been very mobile in my career. Moving around a lot with my husband, who is in the Royal Air Force. And, you know, it was just wearing a bit thin, the idea that every time I moved house, I left behind something, a job, friends, you know, leaving it all behind was really just getting a little last year. So I had this wild idea, and I wish I'd had it sooner, actually. Because that would have been a whole lot easier. But anyway, I had the idea when I did, and that was that. And so COVID came along, and, you know, it's presented lots of challenges for lots of people. So I'm not going to, you know, grumble about this. It's also presented lots of opportunities. And so, you know, my idea of sharing my expertise more widely using the power of technology was really what happened. And, you know, we're doing it. We are, you know, I have a bijou following, shall we say. And you know what, we're loving it. It's so nice to be able to gather even virtually, you know, that we have a little conversation beforehand and then we chat again at the end and we all get together and do something that we, you know, we either enjoy the process of doing or we're very happy when we've done it and it's finished, or, you know, and we know it's doing us good, whether we're enjoying it as we live through it or just the very fact that we've finished it and we can now go and have a cup of tea or whatever.
Do you think we move enough in life, just generally movement? I mean, ignoring perhaps the last 12 months, because obviously a lot of people have been far more sedentary, but do you think just to keep ourselves getting fitter, but just to maintain a good level of fitness, do you think we move as much as we should be doing?
No, absolutely not. I think we've forgotten what it is to be fit and to feel fit. And for that to be just totally embedded in our lives. And, you know, and this is not our fault either. You know, it is merely that modern life has removed so much of what was physical about our lives. You know, I spent a lot of time with a grandmother when I was a youngster, and the posse, I don't know if anybody can remember the posse. No. Anyway, it's a handheld implement that we throw all the washing into a big tub and we manually do the washing manually, you know, and the vacuuming, that was a whole thing, you know, the dust collecting device, I've forgotten what she called it now. But you know, everything, the tumble dryer, it's really tempting not to even walk out to the washing line and hang the washing with the peg. So for everybody in our careers, the physicality has been removed. Automation in industry, and so ultimately we are becoming more and more sedentary. And our hobbies, you know, television has taken over. Box sets are addictive, and we can sit down for hours on end without really meaning to sometimes, you know, and then outsourcing. So doing, you know, we work so hard that we haven't got time to do our own cleaning. And so we outsource that, and then gardening's a chore, so we outsource that. And, you know, all of these are actually opportunities to be physical in the context of your daily life. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm guilty of having done the very same things, you know, I on occasion, for sure. I keep trying to persuade my husband to get a bit more active in the cleaning department. I'll keep working on that.
So, I mean, exercise wise, I mean, I like to run. Obviously, that puts quite a lot of weight, doesn't it, an impact on joints. Do you notice any particular exercises have a more negative impact longer term on women's bodies in particular? I'm thinking about collagen structure, ligaments, tendons.
Well, I think the most part, it's repetitive things.
Right.
Where we're going to notice potentially a problem arising out of something that we do to excess. And similarly, sometimes it's the idea that we introduce something new that our bodies are not familiar with. And that's when things start to break down also. So, you know, inherently, I wouldn't say any exercise is bad for us. I'd say it's all good, and that we should be moving more for the most part. And running, you know, it's not necessarily bad for your knees inherently. There are different schools of thought, you know, although the forces are multiplied when we run. Actually, it's a more brief time that we spend on each joint as we run. And so, you know, you might do the maths and it may well just come out the same as if you were walking. But I think, you know, some people have biomechanical challenges that don't really respond to the multiplication of adding velocity and impact to exercises. You wouldn't necessarily know that until the system breaks down. Cartilage gets its nourishment from the fluid that surrounds the structures in the joint. And so it actually responds to compression and release, that reciprocal compression and release. And so as you offload a joint and swing the leg, then that negative pressure pulls the fluid into the cartilage and nourishes cartilage. So load-bearing exercises are undoubtedly beneficial for joints and cartilage structures and muscles and bones. So I think, you know, it is more about managing our exposure to those things. And maybe if it is a new activity that you're contemplating, then consider a phased introduction. And, you know, on the couch to, is it couch to 10K? I always get that wrong.
I think there are both, but the popular one seems to be the couch to 5K.
That's, yeah. Okay. So, you know, and that's a very a gentle run-walk introduction to running if you wanted to bring that into your life. And so go about it in a phased way. And you know, moderation in all things is kind of my philosophy, really.
I was about to say, yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Have you ever wanted to run a marathon, or have you ever run a marathon yourself?
No, I've never run a marathon. And it kind of comes back to the fact that I'm not biomechanically put together in an optimal way. So that's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? My parents, I guess I have to thank for that. But I've done triathlon. I'm kind of an all-rounder. I've experimented with all kinds of different activities, you know, in part because I've moved around a lot. I'm currently living in my 25th house. So,
gracious.
Yeah, so, you know, and different opportunities present themselves. When I lived in Cyprus, it was perfect for swimming in the sea and then jumping on the bike and then jogging at the end. And I only ever did the sprint distance. I cannot profess to have done, you know, the one that ends with the marathon. No, I didn't do that. I've walked the walk and... you know, I would never ask anybody to do anything that I haven't at least tried once for myself. So I can speak from personal experience, you know, when it comes to coaching people as to how to introduce physical activity into their lives. But as you mentioned, I have a propensity for Pilates and yoga. And that, you know, that really came out of the fact that when I was a young physio, I injured my back. And I was at one time working with a colleague who kind of, she was starting to experiment with Pilates for in a therapeutic context for clients with back pain. And she pointed me in the direction of a training course, which I promptly attended for a weekend. And I felt a huge benefit in my own body after only one weekend. And so I thought there was something in that. So I went and continued to train and do the full training. And I've actually trained with two different schools, because when I lived in America, I had to do that all over again. And now I'm trained to use equipment as well. So the reformer is a piece of Pilates equipment that Joseph Pilates invented many moons ago. But you know, it's one of the most fantastic rehabilitation tools that I have come across. I don't think there's anything you can't do with it. It won't make you breakfast, sadly, but...
or do the cleaning.
Or do the cleaning. That's right.
I mean, do you find, obviously all of these things are fantastic for our physical health. What about mental health? Do you find them beneficial there?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, Pilates and yoga in particular have this very much focused approach to movement. That is that we concentrate the mind on the body quite intently, actually, to generate movement that is precise and controlled and coordinated and pretty to look at as well sometimes. So this inward focus really can help to remove us from the worries of our day. And it might be people get to the end of an hour and go, wow, gosh, that went fast, you know, because they've been so immersed. And there is talk of that state, the flow state, and I think we definitely can access those states when we are working with these kinds of approaches, so yoga and Pilates. And of course, the other thing that we focus on a lot with both of those disciplines is breath work. And so that ability to access the parasympathetic nervous system with only a breath is very powerful. And I speak to that from my own experience of really, I am a woman of a certain age, and that's my passion, is to really help people to walk this path, travel this journey in a way that is mitigating those effects as much as we possibly can for people. And I came to that because of using these techniques for myself. And so breath work, meditation, and yoga in particular was something that I found was wholly beneficial when I was struggling, and still am to a certain degree. I don't know if menopause is ever actually over, you know. So yeah, sleeplessness, insomnia, unexplained anxiety, memory, oh my gosh, you know. So I can speak to having experienced a whole raft of symptoms and use movement and mindful techniques to kind of help me to be as good as I could be.
Yeah, sometimes it's just taking those few seconds, isn't it, between just giving ourselves a few moments to respond. And, you know, I'm thinking about Stephen Porges' polyvagal, you know, and you touched on the parasympathetic there. I mean, if you know, the vagus nerve, the full length of it. And I think, you know, with yoga and Pilates in particular, if you're looking at sort of elongating the spine, it's bringing mindful awareness, isn't it? It's bringing it back to the body.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the thing is, they sort of say that we're living in our heads. I don't even know that we're there, to be honest. But yeah, it takes you out of your whatever might be on your mind, and you can forget about that and connect, really connect with how. And so this is the thing that I'm very passionate about. It isn't just movement. It's really intelligent movement. How are we moving? And get really connected with the how and the why as well. You know, it rarely does a class go by when I'm not explaining to people, helping them to understand the why. Why are we doing this? You know, this is because this is going to benefit your bones, or this will strengthen your muscles, or this is activating the diaphragm and the cylinder that is the core. You know, so I love to teach. Teaching, I've taught for 15 years Pilates, and I've been a physio for above 30 years, and I still have no fatigue when it comes to sharing this message of, you know, move more to feel better. And who knows, you know, we might even just live a bit longer.
And healthier as well, because quality of life, isn't it?
It's absolutely about quality of life. And so osteoporosis can really steal that away from you. And it is a silent disease, illness. That's the wrong word, but it creeps upon us. And, you know, lots of women will travel through menopause without experiencing symptoms. They call themselves the lucky ones, and I'm quite sure they are lucky on a number of levels. But you know, if we are not aware of the ramifications of reducing levels of estrogen for our brain health, for our heart health, and for our bone and skeletal muscle, then there's a danger that, you know, a certain percentage of us will succumb to this deficiency of bone called osteoporosis. And, you know, the risk of fracture is increased from the age of about 50. So, yeah, you know, a wrist fracture is likely the first fracture that people will suffer. And the challenge becomes, if we are not aware that having a wrist fracture from just falling over, from being just standing. So, you know, okay, you're jumping down a huge step. You've decided that you're running down a hill. You are, I don't know, skiing. Okay, we're not skiing at the minute, but say you were. Say you were skiing and you fell over and you fractured your wrist. Well, you might think, okay, you know, I got my just desserts. But if you fall over and break a bone and all you were doing was walking down the street and you tripped, then the chances are that is because the bone is insufficient, is inadequate, and that we've lost a percentage of the bone mass. Now, you'll go to the hospital, you'll get a cast, and you know what? For the most part, it's unlikely that anybody will suggest a DEXA scan at the stage of your first fracture. And so you will continue unawares, potentially, that there may be something some loss of bone that you could actually do something about, that something could be done for. So, and this is the thing, that people then enter into what's called a cascade of fracture. And so the likelihood of suffering a second and potentially a third fracture becomes greater once you've had the first one. And so this is the thing that I encounter regularly when I am working as a physiotherapist in a local clinic, that women will come and they'll be recovering from a fracture and they haven't been offered further investigation. You know, and I think this is something that is could be so simple to, well, one, you know, I'd rather we could prevent this if possible, but to take corrective action, whether it's through exercise, well, and invariably it's going to be a combination of all of those things, exercise, nutrition, and potentially either some kind of hormone replacement therapy or some kind of bone augmentation medication. Because if we suffer a hip fracture in our later lives, that is actually associated with increased risk of death. So, you know, not to frighten people, that's really not what I want to do, but for us to be on the alert and know that even if we swim through this time of menopause, swimmingly, that we're still deficient in estrogen. And if it was some other hormone, I'm also thyroid deficient. So I do take thyroxine every day. You know, if it was some other hormone, that we may just be offered replacement therapy as a matter of course.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Sort of the complete dichotomy between HRT in regard to estrogen versus, as you say, either thyroxine or any other. It's really fascinating how the perception is that, you know, HRT is bad, and it's shifting the emphasis away from that seems really quite tricky.
Yes, and of course it isn't something that everyone can have. So, you know, we try not to bang on too much about, because you are treading a fine line. Whether it's your personal set of beliefs or whether it's because of a medical condition, that avenue is not one that you propose to take or are able to take. But quite the barrier being there for people who might otherwise be interested in having it seems somewhat wrong. And I think, you know, my understanding is that it comes back to some very flawed scientific studies. So that, and also the fact that, you know, it's just not been on the agenda. Women's health is a women's rights issue. And I never considered myself somebody who was flying that flag or beating that drum, but you know what, the more I come to understand, the more I'm likely to jump on that bandwagon, because the scientific research around women's health was brought abruptly to a halt around the time of thalidomide, and that women being included in studies as a matter of course was brought to an end. And so the randomized controlled trials are really only relatively recent, where women are included in that across the board in a lot of scientific studies. And so investigating women's health has just, I think it fell off the agenda around about then, if it was ever on the agenda.
I mean, if we're talking about the skeleton, and also obviously the musculature comes into that, and pelvic floors. Is that one of your sort of your pet projects as well too? Yeah.
Well, so pelvic floor is a women's health physiotherapist area of expertise, and I'm a musculoskeletal physiotherapist. And so my sphere of expertise is muscles and bones and joints and those aspects. So women's health is something, clearly I can't work with women and not know some of this information. And certainly with regards to Pilates, you know, the if we're thinking of the cylinder that is the core around the spine, then we've got to remember the cylinder has a floor and it has a ceiling, and the diaphragm is the ceiling and the pelvic floor is the floor. And so, you know, historically, Pilates has the potential to actually aggravate and load the pelvic floor unnecessarily if we are doing some of the bracing techniques that traditionally were taught, you know, by Joseph Pilates all those many moons ago. And so I'm a clinical Pilates teacher. That means that I can work with populations who have problems as well as people who do not. And so it would be very remiss of me not to pay attention to the pelvic floor, because clearly this is something that it's a muscle, like all the other muscles, and is subject to atrophy. And equally, we can train it, you know. So what I want to be very sure of is that I'm never loading the pelvic floor in unnecessarily, or training it in a dysfunctional way, because the other thing that's important to know is it's a phasic muscle and it works in an on-off kind of fashion. And so if we are encouraging people to create hold within the pelvic floor as they're going about the Pilates, you know, through a hold session, say, for instance, then we risk creating dysfunction and overactivity. So muscles can be lazy and underactive, but equally they can be overactive. And so an overactive pelvic floor is equally not a good thing. So I do, and clearly in my research for you know, my own podcast and my blogs that I write every week, I am, you know, learning a lot about a lot more than I ever knew I needed to know about the pelvic floor. So, you know, and this is something, again, that women we're just not talking about as much as maybe we could. It's a taboo subject still, you know, and the fact that there are ads on the television for Tenolate, it just fills me with dread and disgust, you know. Let's advertise pelvic floor trainers, or, you know, get some get your pelvic floor physio here, not, you know, and okay, maybe jumping on the trampoline was just a step too far, but And then maybe the occasional leak, but this should not be a feature of our lives that we come to accept. And I think that's the thing with a lot of shift towards middle life and older age, is that acceptance is yes, we want to embrace our aging selves, but not to expect decline as a matter of course. You know, and so this is where I'm kind of, you know, I preach a message that is sustainable until the very last moment possible, you know. But, you know, I've always been active. Like I said to you, I've done triathlon, I've skied and ridden horses and done all sorts of crazy things, and mountain biking downhill at high speeds. And, you know, there comes a time when I think I know that this stuff is time limited. You know, there may be a time when I'm not going to do some of those things. And so I want to focus on the things that I know I can take forwards for the very rest of my days. And Pilates and yoga are two things that I think are entirely appropriate and beneficial for us with this passage of time. And not only that, you know, I could go on and on and on, honestly. You know, it's my insurance policy. That's what it is. It's this, you know, having stability around the center of the body means that I'm less likely to fall over. Having good posture means that I'm less likely to sustain a vertebral fracture through osteoporotic collapse, and being strong means that if I did fall, I'm more likely to bounce than break. So, you know, it really is my insurance policy for the future. And that's, you know, I just want to share that with as many people as possible for us to, you know, and high intensity interval training isn't for everyone. Yes, it's got its benefits, but does that really, isn't it feeding into this idea that we should do less than rather than more, you know, and I know there are gains from doing that, but it doesn't cover everything. It hasn't got it all covered, you know, and so a balanced approach, an approach that is multifaceted to address all of the elements of fitness. You know, fitness is about being strong. It's about being supple. It's about being cardiovascularly fit. And so ways in which we can address all those elements. And, you know, I tend to offer a kind of a rolling program so that 1 week we focus on balance exercise. 1 week we focus on posture. 1 week we focus on strength. And then I give them, everyone gets the video to repeat it at leisure during the week, because, you know, 1 hour a week of doing these things, much as I'd love to say it's going to cure all, I think, you know, two or three sessions, and maybe it's not a full hour, you know, you get the opportunity to do 15 or 20 minutes or whatever you have time to do with that video. You know, the gains come from two or three sessions a week of strength training, you know, a couple of sessions, two or three sessions a week of cardiovascular training. Like I said, it doesn't have to be the full hour, but, and of course, you know, this is the stuff I love. So I could do it all day, every day. And, you know, some of the time I'm getting paid to do it, and it's just the most fabulous gift that I am given, you know, to have this in my life. And I really do appreciate that. And just want to share it as widely as I can.
Have you found, you know, it, if I can sort of call it midlife, have you found it to be a time of perhaps increased creativity or entrepreneurship? Have you noticed, you know, energy changes in energy levels? And I know you said brain fog and memory issues, but do you sometimes find that there is a clarity that perhaps wasn't there, or a drive that wasn't there maybe when you were younger?
I know I've always been driven, right. So I can't say yes to that, but what I can say is that I stepped onto a path without fully knowing where that path would take me, without fully having thought it through, without realizing just how invigorating and enthralling I was going to find it, you know. And so I think this is something to consider, that that there are these opportunities to renew interests that you might have had when you were younger. Say, for instance, you know, my children are getting to the stage of flying the coop and not needing me anymore, as in the same way, day in, day out. And so I have this time now that I haven't had before for quite a long time, you know. And so it's been, yes, I've been more creative than I ever imagined possible. but it wasn't part of the plan necessarily, but I think, you know, the path begins when you step on it. Mm. And so to give yourself permission to explore avenues, that's the other thing, really, that, you know, if you keep doing what you always did, you get what you always got. And if you haven't tried it, how the heck would you know whether you're going to like it or not? So, you know, I I've tried so many different things. And that, like I said, I've been very fortunate in that regard. But on the other hand, you know, it's come at a cost as well, that, you know, this mobility has had its advantages and its disadvantages. And so I've, you know, you take the rough with the smooth, like with all these things, and try as much as you can to extract the positive And so, yes, embrace a new skill. It doesn't have to be Pilates, yoga, or anything else. Get in touch with your creativity. That, you know, the brain renewing capacity for exploring new neural pathways. You know, doing something, learning a language and playing a musical instrument are two things that are really going to light up those neural pathways. And you know, the great thing is you don't even have to get good at any of those things, just the very act of trying to do them. So yeah, I mean, actually the yoga training that I've been doing over the last year and a half has been like learning a new language, Sanskrit. It's not a live language, but gee whiz, it has been like learning a new language, and that's you know, set some of the grey matter going.
Neuroplasticity, isn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, we've just got to do, got. I say got to. There is no such thing as you have to or you should or. But it's so enthralling to think that there are new possibilities that you didn't know were there before. You know, so embrace it is all I would say.
Wise words. I could talk all afternoon. It's absolutely fascinating. Philippa, where can people find you if they want to try out some of your classes or even check out your podcast? Where can people connect with you online?
Well, the website, www.precision.co.uk. Is that, have I said that right?
I couldn't say it because it's got a Z in there, hasn't it? So I thought I'd leave it to to say.
And it's got a Z. Yeah, the one with the S was gone when I went to look. So so I opted for the Z, precision with a Z. And, you know, I'm on all the platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Are there any more? Oh, yeah, Twitter. And the podcast is on Anchor FM and it's called Moving Through Menopause. And so my focus is, you know, just to share the message, share some fun, share some frivolity and share some information. And just, you know, if we light a fire of curiosity, get curious, get, you know your body, get to know your body, know what's good for your body. You are the expert of your body. You know, nobody is going to know any more about your body than you do. So, you know, make yourself the expert, know what's right for you and, you know, and thrive, move forwards with energy and enthusiasm, and let's thrive through the second half of our lives. Let's, you know, embrace it and grab it by the horns and, you know, give it a shake.
That's absolutely beautiful. Philippa, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. As I say, it's been extremely enlightening and it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.